what I'm going to do is just look at the dreams. Because our author, as I said earlier, I thought he did a pretty good job interpreting at the beginning. But, boy, the further we get, the wordier he gets, and the less valid, I think, it is. So I will focus on the dreams, and we'll skip where he's too far off. But the dream that we're going to start with, page 198, really is kind of out of place. But and we talked about it in Number and Time, anyone who remembers that. But it's just, I think it's a really interesting dream. In a way, kind of sums up Polly's whole problem. And we'll just look at it very quickly. There's a whole lot you could say, but we don't need to do anything except, I think, get the basic idea. So I'll just read it to you. It's on 198, and there's an artist conception. On a letter E back in your illustrations, figure where it says page 214. There's a vertical and a horizontal circle having a common center. This is the world clock. It is supported by the blackbird. The vertical circle is a blue disc with a white border divided into 4 times 8 equals 32 partitions. A pointer rotates upon it. The horizontal circle consists of 4 colors. On it stands 4 little men with pendulums, and round about it is laid the ring that was once dark and is now golden, formerly carried by the children. The clock has 3 rhythms or pulses. The small pulse of the pointer on the blue vertical disc advances by 1/32. The middle pulse, 1 complete revolution of the pointer. At the same time, the horizontal circle advances by 1/32. The great pulse, 32 middle pulses, are equal to 1 revolution of the gold ring. The basic idea there is this: is the intersection of the vertical and the horizontal. Time is made up of 2 dimensions. The vertical, because it's blue, Jung linked to the spiritual. And the horizontal, because the earth is horizontal, Jung linked to the earth. So that it's the convergence of what we've been talking about, the 2 dimensions, of the timeless and the time.
Bird.
Yeah, there's everything is significant. But I was trying to simplify it. I don't remember exactly what Jung thought, but where I would go with it is it's related to darkness. That you really understand this the best from the point of view of darkness, because that discombobulates your normal way of looking at things. The fact that it's flying to the left isn't such a great idea. But I don't know whether that's the artist's conception or whether somehow he knew that's what Pally dreamed.
So that's not Pally's drawing.
This is not Pally's drawing.
So the blue one moves slower. Now let's see. The blue one moves faster and then the earth one moves slowly?
You know, I didn't even try to figure that out. I wasn't trying to get into all the details.
I think that's weird.
Let's see. A vertical disc has 32 partitions. The pointer on the blue vertical disc advances by 1/32. Yeah, horizontal moves more slowly.
Strange. Eternity.
The transcendental, the a priori self, kairos, those synchronistic moments, the intersection of time with the timeless.
Okay, I was just, we're doing anima and animus with Marilee, and she was talking specifically at that point about that, how we live in time and space and the other realm. There is some form of time. It's not the same as ours, but there is a...
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, and that goes right along.
Mm-hmm. You know, why would Pali have this? To remind him there are two dimensions. Which he never wanted to accept. He never wanted to accept that vertical dimension. So he had that in 1932. This is way before where we are. This is when he was working with that woman, Erna Rosenbaum, and with Jung. But the author brings it in just to point out this business of how directly this image is brought to his attention for decades. As I say, Jung goes on and on and on, and he interprets it, I think, in at least two places. I don't think we need to worry about it. For our purposes, just another image of these two dimensions we've been talking about. That's the point.
Well, and then you'll run a loop at the author, I guess, since the fact that Jung had talked about three-dimensional
mentality. Yeah.
Is that...
Where is that, Jane?
Right underneath the pocket, 3, 1, 2, 3. On page
180. It is a three-dimensional mandala. A mandala in bodily form signifying realization. Whatever a man does in reality, he himself becomes. That's half the story. The other half is doing what's given to be done.
Yes, like the three dimension is in one of the dimensions, the earthly, right? And the other...
Yep.
Is that...
Yep.
And it's not like it's expanding from two dimensions to three dimensions. The three-dimensional man lives in one of the dimensions. Is that mixing
this up? No. I think, again, remember how Jung talks to Pali, always sort of obliquely, and what he's saying very concretely is, Pali, you are what you do. And people say, oh, that wasn't me. Yes, it was. I was just drunk, or I was having a bad day. It really wasn't me. Yes, it was. Because you are what you do. In other words, to get him to take responsibility for his actions. And we've seen how he doesn't take responsibility, time and time again, for his creative work and for his relationship to women. That's the main point, I think, for almost the end of the chapter. If you want to get really good and depressed again, look what Pali says on 200.
Can I ask you one quick question?
Yeah.
I think I've asked you this before, but I'm going to try it again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you put much credence in the Kabbalah in comparison with the alchemy in terms of that you see them?
Well, they're all symbolic systems. That's all.
Because he's trying to integrate that with the Kabbalah.
I think it's very similar. You know, I've never said this to a Jewish person. I wonder what they'd say. But I believe Jung felt that the Kabbalah was to Judaism as Christianity was to Judaism. That Judaism really needed to evolve. That would probably make people mad right there. But, and the way it evolved is through the Kabbalah. In other words, the God, it becomes much more differentiated and has a masculine and feminine component in the Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. So, I think both of them will be very relevant psychologically. You know, I mean, the simple fact is we're Christian, most of us, which is not to make a religious statement, but it's to make a cultural statement. So that the compensatory images for us are largely alchemical because they were largely Christian. Where since we're not Jewish, the compensatory images in the Kabbalah probably aren't going to have as much relevance to us. which is not to say they don't have relevance for those who they're speaking to.
Jewish scholars would agree with what you said.
Yeah.
The Kabbalah is their form of mysticism.
Yeah.
And it holds deep relevance to them.
Good.
So I don't think...
People can be a little touchy on this issue.
Yeah, well, if you talk to a fundamental Jew, you might
differently. Yeah.
My experience in just a little bit of studying of Kabbalah that I've done with a Jewish rabbi is that it's a mystical system.
Yeah.
And they hold great sway by that.
Yeah.
What you said, it keeps the whole tradition fresh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering why Christian movie stars are so attracted to it.
Yeah.
Are they?
Well, yeah, Demi Moore.
Yeah, really?
A lot of people walk around with those. I mean,
okay.
It's like a joke almost.
They have clothing now, Kabbalah clothing. Part of the reason is because in Christianity we have our own form of mysticism, but it doesn't have the order that the Kabbalah does. You know,
or the equality, I think, too, the men and women. The respect that they show. I mean, that's just one movie star's take on the Kabbalah, why they enjoyed it, but I don't know all of it.
Yeah, it's got 10 images of God at its center, and I think there's an equal harmony between the masculine and the feminine.
There's a lot of geometry in it, and it's
fucking
incredible.
Yeah. I really don't know much about it. I mean, I've read a little bit, but I'm really not informed. I guess they had a guy speak at the Jewish Community Center about a year ago. People liked a lot. I forget his name, but he had a...
What I ran across recently, I guess that's tied in with the Kabbalah, is that I was startled that the Hebrew alphabet, each letter has a mystical meaning in itself. And you go down... And it seems like it relates very much to the alchemical threat, those letters in themselves.
It could be, I'm just not aware. Okay, 200. Sorry to do this to you, but 5 lines down. Unfortunately, I have no time. I no longer have time to work on this dream, basically is what he's saying. I think that does the chapter.
Just under that, I just want to ask you for a couple.
Yeah.
The paragraph right underneath one you were just quoting, the third line, he says, based on the number 12, where's that come from? Is it supposed to be 32 there?
It is. Let me see. Of course. I'll have to check that, Carol. Oh, I have it here. I'll check it at the break.
Okay, and then one other word.
Yeah.
Over on 201, the third, first paragraph, third line, the fourth line, it says, it is the F-I-G-T. What's that word supposed to be?
Let's see, where are you? Oh.
Right there.
What line is that?
Fourth one up.
Fourth one up.
I'll have to check both of those.
Oh.
Okay.
I bet it's figure, but you had a fig Newton one anyway. I'll check it to break.
And then that word chest, that's right. That's right next to it. C-H-E-S-S-E-D, that's the word.
I doubt it. I'll check. Thanks for finding this. I didn't even bother reading this. I get sick of it sometimes. Honestly, but I'm not the only one. But
Well, I mean, I think it all made sense. All of this, the way he was working the symbols. Sometimes I really had to think about it to realize what his connection he was trying to make, but...
I'll check this. Okay. Page 204. Yeah, I'm willing to look at questions if you have them, but if not, I'll push on. part of my problem with this chapter is I don't understand exactly what he's talking about. Automorphism and isomorphism, I think, are terms used for products of chemical or physical operations, whereby the product has the same or similar structure as the initial ingredients. Does that sound right, Ted? Do you know those words? Yeah.
So the product has the same what?
Structure. So I can't give you an example, but I think I understand it conceptually. Like you have a certain crystalline structure, and that will be preserved throughout a set of chemical transformations so that the end point, even though it's a different substance, will have a similar structure. Is that?
Yeah. I was just wondering, does it also mean, I'm just wondering out loud.
You're the chemist. That you're supposed to help here.
That the structure has to, the final part has to make the, continue to make the product.
That could be.
I was thinking about how DNA is made, where you have the two strands.
Right.
And they unwind, and then another strand gets duplicated on the strand that unwinds. And I was thinking.
Could be. I don't know.
That's kind of maybe a figurative form, where in the product, that in the product itself is the means of making new.
Well, that could be. That could be.
Design.
Let me explain it backwards and why I think we don't have to get too hung up on this. We had infinite time and you were interested, which I'm not, I don't think you are either, how this all works out. The idea, let's start with the psychological level. The idea is that it is, let's say, a principle of human nature that forms repeat themselves. Synchronicity is classic, that you have an inner dream and that form of the dream appears outwardly in reality. The other thing which we talked about last week is how in one state of mind, once you have evolved to another state of mind, you can sometimes see the form of the second state of mind already implicit in the first state of mind. Like the guy who was interested in child porn got interested in playing. Well, playing carried the form of the child from the first state into the second state.
So that's that
1 and 4. 1 and 4 and 1. That's why I went into it. And what that means practically is where possible, sometimes you can't because harm is being done. But where possible, we try not to judge what looks like pathology. Because very often, in the form of what you would call pathology, is in that form is an anticipation of a future accomplishment which is not pathological. So you could say child porn is pathological. But if you call that pathological to the guy, then you kill the child in him. Because that child was surfacing in the only way it knew how to, and later would surface in play. Now that's another form of this repetition, where one form carries over to the other. And it really does form the basics of our approach, where it can't be sustained as if there's harm being done. Then I think you've got to be ethical in your reactions. But where possible, to see pathology not as something wrong, but as a right thing that hasn't found its final form. Now that I do understand. And now what I think he's doing is saying there are chemical reactions that behave the same way. There are chemical reactions where the first state is anticipation, the second state, or there is a chemical reaction where the end product is capable of reproducing itself in another state. Basic idea between these two analogies is forms reproduce themselves. You know, why worry about it in science? Well, remember that we're talking to a scientist, and it was, I think it's brought up to get him to see how scientific terms also can be seen symbolically. So this is the background for this chapter. And it's going to appear in a dream. So that's why the author goes into it. But I think he goes into it way too much.
Now that you're saying isomorphism...
Well, I was trying not to get into all the details.
Okay.
And just give us the basic idea that we are not really concerned, I don't think we are anyway, concerned about knowing the fineries of the chemical process, but to realize there are processes in nature where forms reproduce themselves, and that was a language that Pauli could have dealt with and heard, and indeed it appears in a dream. But the real point isn't to get to know science. It's that he could begin to see how science is a metaphor. And so I don't quite understand the scientific principle, but I do understand what it refers to. And that, since it's what it refers to that's at stake, that's why I've limited this discussion to that.
Gary, in the reproduction from a science point of view, is there evolution in addition to the form of
I think there could be, but the point... Yeah, the point, see, I don't know all the details here, but I think the point was just to drive home to Pauli this concept of analogy, that there are reactions in nature where you can see analogies between the first and second state, and there are reactions in the psyche where you can see analogies between the first and second state. And the big point here is that there is an analogy in the reason he's attracted to von Franz, and the work he is to do creatively. That's where it all comes down to. But it's using it. The dream brings in scientific language, so the author works with the scientific concept as a metaphor, because that's what would have been able to get across to Pauli. So once again, we see that science is as much a metaphor as fact. We've seen the splitting. We've seen now this automorphism and isomorphism. We saw something else. I forget what it was. The square root of negative one. All of these concepts can also be used as metaphors. And in fact, the unconscious does use them as metaphor. To that end, he goes into Jung's dream. I'm going to skip that unless you have any questions.
And that's his example of automorphism.
Yeah, that the form of the flower in Jung's dream shows up in lights throughout the city as a metaphor for the fact that synchronicity is an inner form reflecting the outer world. And I think if you are in touch with yourself, what you give to the world will catch on and appear in other places.
Is the fact that the original vision went from the magnolia to a more abstract thing, is that automorphism too?
See, I'm trying to avoid all these questions.
Okay, never mind.
I really don't know. I really don't know. I don't know the answer to that. So that's 204, 205, 206, 207.
You know, the top of that 207 is the sixth, but the synchronistic experiences are on the contrary singular acts of creation in time. So is he just emphasizing that each one is a distinct act of creation?
Yeah, because I think the real point is at the bottom.
Okay.
Jung, the symbolic schema itself represents the descent into matter. So the inner image becomes an outer material event. And conversely, outer material events can teach us something about our inner symbols. It works both ways. Does that make sense, everybody? In other words, polysynchronicity consists in the fact that von Franz is there. And that symbol, that fact, was to communicate an inner symbol. So it's this reciprocity between inner and outer. Sometimes one precedes the other. But the material becomes psychic. That's the point. The psychological structure appears in another medium, namely material world, but it's the same structure. I think if you understand that, that's the point. Psyche cannot be totally different from matter, for otherwise could it move matter? Psyche and matter exist in one and the same world, and each partakes of the other, otherwise any reciprocal action. See, I think that's the key word, reciprocal action. Would be impossible. If research could only advance far enough, therefore we should arrive at an ultimate agreement between physical and psychological concepts. Our present attempts may be bold, but I believe they are on the right lines. I think we can skip 208. And then focus on 209, unless you got
just questions. Just a text question for the bottom paragraph, 208, second sentence. Is there a word missing there?
He must end, yes. I'll check that too at the break.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll check those, Carol. Now we're going to slow down and look at these dreams. Two and nine. Yeah. All we've done is just skip a very wordy commentary on reciprocal action. And I think if you got that, that's fine. Now, it doesn't appear in this dream, but it does in the next dream, but... At the place where Wallenstein atoned for his sins with his death, a new religion shall arise. And the author completely blows it, I'm afraid. You like puzzles? You might just try playing with it. Then I'll read you. I think Dave, in Dave's book, he got it right. Wallenstein, I guess it would be pronounced, was a general or a military commander working for, I've got the guy's name, I think it's Frederick somebody, one of those Habsburgs, Catholics, leading his army. And he figured out that he could get ahead if he would become a turncoat and fight for the Protestants. So he betrayed Frederick, and was ready to put his army against defeating his boss. And Frederick, whoever it was, I forget, got word of it and had him executed. Ambushed, I think. And so the dream is saying where he atoned for his sins with his death, a new religion shall arise. The sin would be, but here's the puzzle now. That sin, the author wants us to say, I believe, would be his betrayal of Frederick. Let me get the name right. I think David tells us. I don't think he does tell us. One of the Catholic Habsburgs who was in power at the time.
So what's the puzzle? You're saying this is a puzzle.
That interpretation, if you think about it, couldn't be right.
Okay, the fact that the sin is...
Is his betrayal of Frederick. Couldn't be right. It's a fine point, but you agreed, so...
The fact that he was not true to himself?
Well, That's the later interpretation. But just on the basis of the text, why, what is wrong with the statement? Well, I'll tell you. No.
We don't know what she's going to say. Yeah, but you just know.
Oh, I can tell where she's going.
It sounded like a new arrangement. It was like in a row. It sounded like it was still the old Protestants and Catholic Bible.
Well, you're not too far off. A sin according to whom?
Yes.
See what I mean?
Yes.
If you say, if you take the text verbatim, that implies an identification with the Catholic point of view. It was a sin as far as the Protestants were concerned. See what I mean? I'm just, that's how you have to play with this stuff. And what it does, it locks you into an either or between Catholic and Protestant, where the issue is neither. It is a sin against himself. Now, this is what, the author could have never known this, so, but this is what David says. David apparently talked to Polly's good friend, can't think of his first name, Fiertz, Marcus Fiertz, the physicist, about the dream. And he says, as Fiertz pointed out to me, it was not the historical Wallenstein, but Schiller's Wallenstein that Polly would have associated with his dream. Our author takes it as about the historical figure. And what Schiller did was take that historical figure and turn it into a poem. Schiller portrayed Wallenstein as a man who was guided by the stars. Isn't that beautiful? Back to the stars again. And yet was possessed by a yearning to withdraw from his fate. A course that fate would not allow. So that's the sin, not following his stars. And boy, is that accurate or what? And fate would not allow it. So in that little sentence is an incredibly powerful message. As Fiertz pointed out to me, it was not the historical Wallenstein, but Schiller's Wallenstein, which I will read that poem when I have some time, that Pauli would have associated with his dream. Schiller portrayed Wallenstein as a man who was guided by the stars and yet was possessed by a yearning to withdraw from his fate, a course that fate would not allow.
Now, does that suggest that another person could have done that and that would have been not a sin?
Right. That's what one has to reckon with if you dive into the unconscious. If you find a gift there and you don't use it, good luck. If you don't find a gift there, you're lucky. Go party.
So if we were to relinquish Sally, was he a man guided by the spirit?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. But he didn't want to accept
it. No. Guided by the stars, that is the writing he was supposed to have done, the lecturing he was supposed to have done, and the relationship he was to have accepted to help him do that, and the humility to pull that off.
But he has got to dig his
faith
in death, right?
Right. Or death was the price he paid for turning away from his faith.
So would Schiller be somebody that Polly would have?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. He'd be like our. Well, we don't even read Shakespeare, but the Europeans are all know Goethe and Schiller. It's like their constitution almost. Now, I haven't read that poem. I'd like to find out more about how Schiller portrays Wallenstein. I'll just have to do that when I have some time. But I think it makes a lot more sense.
But during when it talks about sin, it would be the sin from the viewpoint of the self.
Of the self, right. Right. And, you know, there's no way the author could have known that, being fair to him. Okay. Now you'll see in this next dream why all this talk about reflecting structures and isomorphy mm-hmm. and so on. A major war is being waged. Political news that I wish to send to people is censored. Then my mathematics colleague A appears with his wife. I know both of them from my old days in Hamburg. A says cathedrals should be built for isomorphy. She should be P-H-Y. Cathedrals should be built for isomorphy. Then from Mrs. A come more words that I cannot understand and written text that I cannot read. Well, again, I'm going to try to shorten what he says. Cathedrals should be built for isomorphy is the point. So if you would, you know, now let's just restate that word isomorphy. Cathedrals should be built for reflecting structures. For reflecting similarity of structures. Now, rephrasing that again, cathedrals should contain the form of what is inside us. The inner structure should be reflected in an outer structure, and that is the religious task. That's how I would translate that.
Say that again.
Inner structures should be reflected in our outer accomplishments, and that's the religious task. Finding what's inside and putting it outside should be our new cathedral. That's the new sacred task. So, church should be your creation outwardly, what you're given inwardly in time and space. That's how I would take that. That's why we had to go into that similar structure stuff.
And
yeah.
In some ways, isn't it already happening? Greed is so manifested on the outer.
Yeah.
Well, there's just no reflection on it.
Well, there's no reflection. It's not, and it should really be the inner form of the self.
To hold a person responsible.
No, that's what we should create outwardly. Not the shadow be greed.
Oh.
Or even, no, I think I have to reframe that. See, that's the old way of speaking right there. So easy to slip back. Even look at what you are greedy for. And then see on what level that contains your future accomplishments. Yeah. Now that's, I absolutely gave you the old world answer. See how easy that is? Desire is bad. Mm-hmm. When you have to drive in the freeway, these maniacs. It does seem bad sometimes. But the deeper point is that in that desire and greed and lust is a shape. And that shape is a premonition of an accomplishment on a different level. So again, we know the basic message, but I think the value in this is seeing all the different ways the unconscious tries to get it across. So it gives us a kind of a breadth of imagery that is likely to appear in our unconscious as we attempt this shift. And I think, again, notice how, you know, the dreams use scientific imagery to convey this, so that the science is as much a myth and metaphor as anything. The point he makes on 211 is that for Pali, this worked in a dangerous way. He was creating his inner state in an outer form with the Pali effect, but negatively.
It's already happening, you know, in so many ways.
Yeah.
And when you're that powerfully gifted like Pali was, it's even more blatant when you have it. Mm-hmm. It's just now, how do you fix it to so it's more...
Well, or how do you recognize that you have to interpret your experience? I think that's what Pali could never understand. Or if he understood, he never put into reality. You know, go for the thing and then say... what form is in there.
I mean, on 211, the end of the last large paragraph.
Yes.
Basically says, I think, in another way, what, because without a true religious attitude, the healing creative power of multiplication very possibly would turn into its opposite.
Right.
He tells us the difference between isomorphy and automorphy.
Well, did you understand it?
I thought I did.
Try and explain it.
He says that in isomorphy, the things don't have to be in relation to one another. But in automorphy, they have an inner relationship. There's a relationship between the things. Because they have the same essence.
I'll take your word for it. I'd like to have somebody sit down and explain it clear chemically.
Yeah, that's just the impression I got.
Yeah, before I really understand it. Because for our purposes, I don't think we really... What we need to just get is how events can be symbols. Well, probably the event was von Franz. And the symbolic message was, create along the lines of why you are attracted to her.
In some way, at times in here, it seems like he has a glimpse of that understanding.
Yeah, we talked sort of that last week. I would say even... a brilliant insight. And then it's gone. I mean, that paragraph we read last week, where was it? I don't remember exactly. Is it 192? No. Well, it doesn't matter really, but yes, yes, Ted, he really does. I think it's before that. Well, yeah, he does. But that's the nature of the fragmented consciousness.
One question. Since she is of the opposite sex that he is married, how would he negotiate that sexually intimate bond?
That's the problem. With a lot of mess.
So you have to be prepared for the best.
Or the worst. Yeah, I think in the best of all possible worlds, he could have done it He didn't have to have a sexual relationship with her, but he had to live with his feelings. I think it's much easier today. Maybe than it was then. I don't know. But it takes maturity.
So von Franz would have kind of taken on the role of analyst and that phrase.
No, I think it would have been, it could, in the best of all possible worlds, it could have been a reciprocal, supportive, emotionally supportive relationship. I mean, I think she would have accepted it on. She probably would have liked to have an affair, but if not, I don't think she would have said no. But he couldn't even stand to feel it. That's my impression. Because it discombobulated him, and he always had to be on top. And he wouldn't have been on top with her. First of all, was an enormously powerful woman. Secondly, those feelings would have played havoc with him. Should we have a stretch?